Blank Check with Griffin and David. Blank Check with Griffin and David. Don't know what to say or to expect. All you need to know is that the name of the show is Blank Check.
I think that A, you have a podcast, and that B, not having a podcast is your podcast.
Hello.
Hi, everybody. I'm Griffin Newman.
I'm Campbell Scott. No, I'm David Sims.
And with us, as always, we're the two friends.
Wow, you really were jumping in. We're the two friends, and this is a podcast.
We're trying to move fast.
Called We Podcast.
We Podcast. What's going on there? Hot mic.
I hit a chord there.
Hot mic.
Which is about, it's this podcast called Blank Check. We Podcast.
We're starting late today, so we're trying to catch up. We're trying to make up for lost time. This podcast is called Blank Check. We here, the two friends, David Sims and I, like to talk about directors who have had big successes early on in their careers and spend the rest of their career.
Yeah, either cashing or bouncing their blank checks.
Exactly. Because this is a series made up of mini-series. We go director by director, cover their filmography, we pod a cast. This is episode 2 about one Academy Award winner, Cameron Crowe, the first feted filmmaker we have discussed on this show.
Feted.
He was feted with an Academy Award.
Oh, I see. Of course. Yes, that's
feted.
True. But he hadn't won it yet when he made the film we're discussing today in 1992.
Picture's called Singles.
Singles!
And I'd say, in terms of baseball analogies, I'd say this is about a single. This is an on-base single.
It's a single. Yeah, it's a little blooper, you know, that like maybe the shortstop kind of bobbles it and he sort of gets it to first base, but not quite in time.
He got on base. It's not.
And so it's like, yeah, oh,
it's
know,
not a strikeout.
Golf clap.
It's a golf clap. This would be far more impressive as a first movie.
Yes. But if he'd made this as his first movie, would Cameron Crowe have gone anywhere?
I don't think so.
Maybe not.
It's just weird because this one feels a bit like a backtrack.
In his narrative, I believe this was a bit of a, you know, this was kind of a down period.
Yes.
Like, you know, he had to sort of rebound from this movie.
Well, we'll get to this, but I want to talk about the third person in the room right now. Of course, we're hashtag the two friends. But today has been brought to our attention. Why aren't we referring to ourselves as the three buddies?
No, we're the two friends.
We're the two friends.
There is also another friend.
Because what's the title that is more impressive, carries more weight than a friend? If you really care about someone, you don't call them a friend. You call them a producer.
That's right.
It's the highest honor you can bestow upon someone.
Sure.
Producer Ben, a.k.a. Purdue Ben, a.k.a. the Ben-ducer, a.k.a.
me.
The Haas,
a.k.a.
the Poet Laureate, a.k.a. Mr. Positive, a.k.a. the Peeper, a.k.a. Birthday Benny.
It's actually my birthday on Friday.
Hey,
woo!
Hey now.
Boom.
A.K.A. the tiebreaker.
Once a year, that really works.
It really works.
A.K.A. the Fuckmaster.
That's right.
He is not, nor will he ever be, Professor Crispy.
Mm-mm.
Well, who knows?
Please greet him with a hearty hello, Fennel, if you see him on the street. But also, you should know that he graduates to certain titles at the end of certain miniseries, and he is now festooned with badges. Adorned on them are the names Producer Ben Kenobi, Kylo Ben, Ben Knight Shyamalan, and Ben Sate.
Hearing that should make you want to dive into our back catalog and listen to all the reasons those names would have been created.
Yeah.
Because in episode 1, he was Producer Ben.
That's done.
Right. Yeah. It was only that.
Out of here.
Woo!
Yeah.
Well, hey, guys.
Hi.
This is a movie we watched.
We definitely watched this movie.
Yeah.
We watched a movie.
I watched it on a Sunday morn.
Uh-huh.
You know. It was an okay way to pass the hours between 8 and 10 a.m., somewhere around there. Might have been 9 and 11 a.m.
This is a good shit-talking movie. I watched with my roommates.
Oh, and you were making fun. I think Ben likes the movie less than us.
I think so.
Because this, to me, is like a 3-star movie.
What? No. No way.
2.5.
3 out of 5 or 3 out of 4?
5.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not Roger Ebert. I've made this joke before. I'm no Halliwell's film guy.
So I saw this movie. I was trying to explain to a friend of mine last night because I told him we were talking about this tomorrow, and he is older.
This movie has its fans.
Yes.
Yeah. So is this your friend? Is he a fan? Was it Joe Garden?
It wasn't. Although it was while doing my show with Joe Garden.
Yeah.
My buddy Chris McCullough was at the show afterwards, and I was talking to him, and he was saying like, I can't even imagine that movie would have any relevance to you because, like, I grew up, like, I was the age of those characters when that movie came.
Sure, right.
And that felt like an important generational movie. Mm. And I don't even know what it would mean if you saw it, like, today, but I'll say my girlfriend had never seen it before. and I was like, I can't believe I've never seen Singles. So we saw it, we rented
sure,
it.
Right, right.
And he was like, this movie means fucking nothing to me now.
I mean, I can buy that this was the movie of like a generation maybe, but even compared to Say Anything, it has no lasting cultural
no.
footprint. It's not like you hear a line in this movie and you go, oh, that's where that line comes from.
And here's the thing, even...
Or you see Dylan and you're like, oh, this is Dylan's best.
Yeah.
Dylan at his best.
Even bad Cameron Crowe movies usually have at least one, like, classic Crowe line.
Yeah.
You know? And I was looking
through... The chili dog line is my favorite line.
Yeah.
Yeah, but go on.
There are a couple that come kind of close, but I was looking at the IMDb page for the quote that I was going to butcher into the intro of the show, and I was like, there are a lot of sort of equivalent level quotes in this movie.
Like, you know, like a okay, like B-minus quotes.
Yeah, but there's not like a sort of like stuck in your craw kind of line.
Yeah.
And I chose that A1 because it felt like structurally, I mean, it was funny to be able to use the word podcast three times.
No, you did a good, it was a good quote. And honestly, that's a decent line.
And the format of that, it kind of was my favorite line. But I did, I mean, so I saw this movie for the first time when I was in high school. And I went through this weird Gen X phase.
Mm-hmm. This is definitely trying to be like the Generation X movie.
But I think Reality Bites is probably more successful than this, right?
Reality Bites, although that's not a movie that I love per se, is way more successful.
It tapped into the
thing.
Is
smarter, is funnier, is better acted, and has a story.
Yeah.
This movie is a bunch of little jangly bits and pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't have much to say about anything, and I think...
It doesn't have much to...
say anything about anything.
Yeah.
But I think that's the problem. It's like, it feels like Crowe is trying to like just sort of write like very broad and like, you know, doesn't have any of his weird original voicey stuff in it. Not enough, at least.
So this movie was produced by Art Linson.
Okay, who's that?
Who produced Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Okay.
And directed The Wild Side. The Wildlife. Is that what it was called? The one that was like the leftover stuff from Fast Times.
It was called The Wild Something, and I'll have more for you on that in a moment, so keep talking.
Only 20 minutes from now, UCB's wireless network will start doing us some favors.
Those are the wheels of the wireless turning. The steam starts to, like, puff.
He directed that forgotten sort of Fast Times spiritual sequel. Mm. And then if I understand correctly, I believe Crowe wrote this screenplay immediately after that.
Okay. After Fast Times?
And The Wildlife or whatever it was
called. So like in the mid-80s?
Yeah.
Okay.
He wanted to make this like right in the mid-80s before Say Anything. I think this was originally going to be his debut film.
Okay.
And they like couldn't get the financing for a while. It was close to getting made. It didn't. Da-da-da-da-da. And then after Say Anything, when he had some sort of heat, he was like, oh, this screenplay I wrote 7 years ago, we should make this.
Sure. And, you know, I mean, it's not an expense. Like, once you made Say Anything, like, surely you can scrape the money together.
Yeah, and that movie was well-liked, not a massive financial
success. The budget
for
this one was $9 million, which is smaller than Say Anything.
Yeah. And I think this makes...
Wildlife came out in 84. Wildlife.
Okay. Yeah.
Art Linson, yes.
I think this... movie makes more sense as a first screenplay. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, sure.
Or like, I know Fast Times was adapting his own book.
No, no,
but like,
no.
Here's your first original screenplay. Like Cameron Crowe, you're going to try to make a movie. Here's your first strike. I think the mistake was after Say Anything, which is a far better work, to go back to this earlier thing he had, you know,
it's kind of inconsequential. People
it
like this movie, though. I don't want to dismiss this movie because I do feel like it has that little core fan base that
I don't either
speak up for it.
And I don't want to use you know, Chris's words to speak for everyone, but he was sort of saying like at the time when you were that age watching that movie when it came out, it felt like it was something.
Right.
And watching it now, I'm aware that it like didn't crystallize this thing as much, and there are other films that are better time capsules.
It kind of makes me think of this watching this movie. Remember Kurt Loder on MTV?
Yes.
Like not a cool dude.
No.
Right?
Objectively.
And all the characters in this movie are super not cool, I would say, for the most part. I guess, like, I don't know. We can get into it. But overall, I feel like it's just, like, a bunch of, like, really unhip, like, young people that are supposed to be cool or something.
Well, they're you know, proto-yuppies mostly. But, like, that's the generation. That's,
but,
you know, what it's about.
I mean,
know?
Not to keep on comparing it
to
Rally Bites.
No, man.
Yeah,
there were punks. Cyberpunks.
The early 90s? Yeah. Early 90s is like, yeah, it's post-Reagan. Everyone's like, I'm going to go be a graphic designer.
No, man, there's like cool zine culture, sure, especially
well,
in the
well,
Pacific
Northwest.
That's
not what this is about. Yeah, no,
well,
this
clearly
is
not
about that.
They're talking about a bunch of fucking soon-to-be yuppie jerk-offs.
But when Cameron Crowe wrote the screenplay, the thing he
Cameron
was interested...
Cameron Crowe writes about yuppie jerk-offs.
Yes.
I just want to make that. Like, that is what he always
actually,
writes
you're
about.
Right, though.
That
that's
is Cameron Crowe's wheelhouse.
When Cameron Crowe wrote the screenplay, apparently the whole thing was he wanted to try to capture this like scene that was emerging in Seattle.
Yeah, the grunge scene, and like not the cool grunge scene, like the Pearl Jam grunge scene.
Right.
You know, like,
but this was like mid-80s into late-80s, and when they started filming the movie, I mean, the sort of anecdote that explains the weird timeline of this movie was this movie took a while to get made, and then once they shot it, Warner Brothers didn't know how to release it, and they kept it on a shelf for like over a year.
Yeah, right, because they didn't know what to do with it. And then suddenly, Alice in Chains, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, they all hit.
Right. I mean,
it's true. And like Eddie Vedder's in this fucking movie, and like all these people are in this movie.
They shot this movie before Nevermind was released.
Right.
And by the time they were like finishing up the movie, they couldn't afford the rights to any of the tracks off of Nevermind anymore. Right. And it's like that's like the film ended up being released just in time to look like it was sort of like cashing in on a wave when it was really like he was way before it and maybe wasn't as tapped into it as the public want. Like, this film doesn't feel like it was made in the wake of a cultural movie.
He's
because
a music
it was,
writer. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And it feels like he was just making a movie about a couple people he knew in Seattle rather than like a movement, you know?
Here's
which he wasn't. That's my point. I mean, it's not held against him.
No, it's but the music stuff in this movie is an afterthought.
Yeah, which
Matt
is
Dillon's
weird.
Character is the biggest afterthought.
Yeah.
He has no plot.
Yeah.
They try to conjure a plot about him like getting a bad review and like maybe his band's not going to go anywhere, but there's no plot.
But he's maybe the best performance?
Oh, no, I don't think so. I wouldn't even put
really?
Him in the top five. Yeah, he did nothing for me. He's fine.
See, I like him in this movie, and I think the weird thing with this movie is, and this also feels like a relic of Crowe in like an immediate post-Fast Times phase,
sure,
is like that character feels like a real Spicoli to me.
Oh, yeah, no.
You know? I'm not saying he's as good as Spicoli, but I think there's a similar dynamic where it's like, okay, you got a couple straight characters, and then you got one guy who's like a little more like... He's got a funny vibe.
I don't agree. I think he's a flop if you're going to compare him to that guy because he doesn't come in and change the movie at all. Like, he doesn't do anything.
I'm not saying he's anywhere near as good as Spicoli. I'm
but
saying I think a character functions in a similar way within the film, but in a very muted way.
Very muted.
Yeah, he's very muted.
It's, by muted, you mean it's on mute. Like, there's no
quiet.
Sound.
I like him in this. I like
I
him.
Don't dislike him. I just think he's kind of doing like I'm a stoned guy. Yeah, I'm a little bit of an airhead performance.
Yeah, maybe I just like...
He, like, talks to the camera, but, like, only later, and you're like, whoa, he's talking to the camera now?
But it opens with Keira Sedgwick talking to the camera.
It does.
I mean, I guess the idea is that there are four main characters, but he's the least fleshed out of the four. He's the only one who doesn't have his own sort of inner life, it feels like.
Yeah, I mean, Fonda is also not... We'll get to her.
But it's first build.
I just... Yeah, no, it's weird. Yeah. The billing is hard to make out. You're like, oh, is this an alphabetical? No, because Cedric's not, you know, like, well, is Campbell Scott's second build? All right. But
that's another weird thing with this movie is that, like, you look at Fast Times, it's like, okay, that movie's beautifully cast, right?
Great cast.
And, like,
great cast. Down, like, the guys you know and the guys you don't know. They're all great.
But it definitely feels like, you know, some of those people were bigger at the time the movie was released. Some of them popped 10 years later. Some of them are at their biggest now. But, like, it's a collection of actors.
You mean
who,
Reinhold?
Yes.
At his biggest now.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a collection of, you know, people who, like, made marks in cinema.
Absolutely.
And same with Rowdy Bites.
And it's like, oh, yeah, you watch this and you're like, yeah, they had a good eye.
Yeah.
They had a good eye.
And you watch Say Anything and there's the similar thing with Cusack where it's like, man, they got fucking Sack. And this movie's fascinating to me because it's like, here's
and
like,
Mahone.
Yeah,
they own Mahone.
They own Mahoney. This movie's fascinating.
I'm bringing that
to me.
Joke back.
Yeah. Unbreakable. This movie's fascinating
no.
to me. Yes.
No.
Yes. 100%.
Yes.
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 Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes.
All right. All right. All right. Fine.
Unbreakable.
And do me a favor.
Yeah.
Right after us chanting yes and convincing you to put in Unbreakable.
Fingered?
Yeah. Can we get fingered?
Fingered.
Fingered. Yes. That was you. That was all you, Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but do we need to call it back?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
Create a mythology here, Ben.
You're right.
The blank checkiverse. The thing that's fascinating to me about this movie is the four leads in this movie are four people who didn't really become movie stars in the way that people expected them to.
No, although none of them became nothing. They're all still floating around. And Keira Sedgwick, Emmy winner. closer.
For the closer.
She closed. Yeah, for the closer. She was always the closest.
The show where she always goes, hey, come a little closer.
No,
I can't hear you. Come a little closer.
What I want to say is, like, if I tell you, hey, Singles, it was a Cameron Crowe movie, and you're like, okay. It's set in Seattle during the grunge scene.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and it's called Singles? Is it about rock music?
Yeah.
No. Like little single apartments? Oh. Yeah, there's these like houses that had little single apartments for singles. Because they're singles. Well, do they do any music? No, they go to a concert.
One of the four is in a band. Two
He's in a band. You don't
concert.
Really see them performing.
But it feels like a perfect movie to have a double meaning title. Like you're like, oh, it should be Singles,
That's the thing,
and it
right.
should be based around them buying like cassette singles.
Cassingles.
Cassingles.
What if it was called Cussingles?
I mean, I would love it.
Then maybe a prequel.
Yeah.
What if Cameron Crowe today was like, guys, my next project, Cassingles.
For years, people have been approaching me, asking me when I would revisit the word of singles. And now is the time.
So,
but you know what I'm saying? It's like interesting because there are four actors who like, none of them, I mean, I guess Dylan was the most established at that point.
He was already a big star because he'd been around for 10 years doing his sort of teen stuff. He'd been in, you know, the Francis Ford Coppola, you know, Rumble S.E. Hinton
and
movies.
Outsiders
and he'd been in, what else? Let's take a look. He'd been in, you know, the Flamingo Kid.
Yeah.
And Drugstore Cowboy.
Right.
And yeah, you know.
Love Drugstore Cowboy. Yeah.
He had done a lot of work, but then he sort of dips a little bit after this movie.
A real dip. And then, like, he has that late 90s, like, To Die For, There's Something About Mary, like,
little
mini blip.
He comes back as a comedy guy. Yeah.
But then that doesn't, you know, Wild Things, but then that doesn't stick either.
And then he comes back with Crash.
He comes back with Crash, and
people are like,
good
supporting actor.
And then, literally, I'm looking at his Wikipedia credit right now, and five movies in a row are direct-to-VOD.
He did Factotum. Which is a Bukowski.
Yeah.
And that was right around the same time as Crash, and he's great in it.
Yeah.
And again, you were thinking like,
Me
and Dupree.
Yeah, these are
Old Dogs.
I will say he's really good in Old Dogs, and I'm not just saying that.
Okay.
I'm not just saying, but look, even like, okay, so his film's coming up right after Crash, or Loverboy, which is directed by Bacon with Kira Sedgwick. Factotum, which is the Bukowski movie. Then you go Herbie Fully Loaded, Me and Dupree.
He's the lead sort of person in that. Or is he the villain? Is Keaton the lead dad guy?
Keaton's Lindsay Lohan's dad in the movie.
The lead,
And Matt Dillon is the evil racer.
And this is, that's a movie.
Yeah. Right. And then, okay, so then he does Nothing But the Truth. But that's sort of the only drama, like real drama he does after Crash, you know?
Yeah.
He does a lot of catching stuff.
He's in Armored. Remember Armored?
But that's like an action movie.
Yeah, no, I know. But
Takers is a similar, like,
oh, yeah.
Screen
that's
gems
kind of. That's the one where
kinda,
Hayden has his little hat.
That's Hayden's Hat the movie.
Hayden's Hat the movie.
Hey, look at me, I got a hat on.
And then it just went away again. You know, Dylan's had a funny career. And all these guys have had funny careers. I mean, you know, Bridget Fonda, who I think is pretty good in this movie.
And I'm quite fond of her.
She looks wonderful. She's so cute.
One comedy point.
Fond of Bridget.
Fond
of Bridget.
You know, she had just been in Doc Hollywood and Single White Female. So she was like a big deal.
Oh, wow. So I didn't realize this was right after SWF. Yeah.
I think it's the same year.
SWF, yeah.
And then, you know, then you've got It Could Happen to You, which I think is a cute movie.
Yeah, she's cute in that.
Then she's in like a bunch of crap that like was supposed to be good. Like
The Road
City
to Wellville.
Hall, The Road to Wellville. And then she's in Jackie Brown and you're like, yeah, like Quentin got a really good performance out of her here. This is great. And that was that. Like,
yeah.
And never was she heard from again.
Was her last film ever Monkey Bone? Is that possible?
No, because she was also in things called Kiss of the Dragon and the whole shebang the same year, but I've never heard of those. So
Kiss of the Dragon was a Jet Li movie. That was the first American Jet Li vehicle.
Yes, and she's second billed on the poster. Bridget Fonda.
Yeah.
Kiss of the Dragon.
And then I don't know whole shebang. And that's the last thing she ever did?
The whole shebang is a movie by George Zaloom.
But does her career end?
It's over.
She's married to Danny Elfman now, and she doesn't do anything.
Just takes it easy.
I loved her. I thought
she
was
a kid.
A really, really winning screen presence.
I think she's cute in this. I do think the movie gives her pretty short shrift for most of the movie.
Yeah.
At the end, it kind of turns her into a real character, like in the last two scenes, and you're like, oh, where was this during the whole boob job subplot?
Yeah, which we'll talk about.
Oh, boy.
But I watched Jackie Brown with my sister.
Well, it's one of my favorite movies. My favorite Quentin Tarantino movie by a mile. I love that movie.
It's my second favorite film of this, but I think that movie's a masterpiece.
Sure. What's number one?
Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
I go Inglourious Basterds and then Jackie Brown. But I watched it with her, and she just, like, from the first scene, my sister was like, who's this?
Who's that? Yeah, right, right.
Like, Bridget Fonda is so good in that and so controlled and so understated. And it's a really interesting character.
Totally.
In a small supporting part, and it feels
she's
like
very good, though.
A real kind of reinvention for her.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, like, amazing because, like, because none of her movies, even if she was kind of big with all this promise at the time, if you're born in 1998, like my sister is, you don't grow up watching Bridget Fonda.
No,
you have
no
awareness of her.
The name Fonda might mean something to you. You might have heard that there
she's
are movie stars
Peter
with the
Fonda
name
movies,
Fonda.
But she hasn't seen Bridget
Fonda.
Well,
we've all seen Uli's Gold.
Yeah.
You know, we all, when we're young, when we're five or six, our parents sit us down and they're like, okay, it's time.
It's time
for you to see it. Time for you to see Uli's Gold.
You're finally old enough to dig for gold. It's interesting, like, to watch something like that. And, like, Romley's reaction was very much like, why don't I know who this person is?
Because she
yeah,
you know, she cut it out. She stopped.
Kira Sedgwick, the role, was originally supposed to be Jennifer Jason Leigh.
That was his idea, but she turned it down.
Yeah.
And, of course, weirdly enough, she's in Single White Female with Bridget Fonda the same year.
And it had been in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Well, obviously, I'm sure that's what he was thinking.
Yeah.
And then Jodie Foster and Robin Wright Penn were considered for the part.
Both
but
would be excellent.
Bridget, I mean, Kira got it, and I think she's good in the movie.
I think she's fine.
I think she's pretty good.
I think...
She had been in Born on the 4th of July. That was her big breakout.
I think Campbell Scott, this is coming right after Dying Young, which, you know, Premiere Magazine predicted would be the highest grossing film of that year.
Yeah, he was in Longtime Companion, which is this, like, sort of... early gay
AIDS crisis
movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that good, but it's sort of an interesting little artifact. And then Dying Young, right, which is awful.
Yeah, but we're supposed to be a huge
hit. With Julia Roberts.
Yes, and I think he got cast on the heat of that, of them presuming that movie would be big.
Yeah.
I think both of them...
I think he's all right. Campbell Scott is, I think, an A-plus top shelf actor. But he is not good in a role of, like, a nice, normal guy who wants to find a girlfriend.
He's not a movie star. Like,
that's not his thing.
He doesn't have that spark. And I think Kira Sedgwick is a fine actress, too. But I think,
I think she's good
for
in
a movie like this that's so
she's
much
appealing.
About personality.
Yeah.
Because there's not much of a plot or any plot whatsoever.
Yeah.
And there's no real hook to it. You need people who just got some sort of wattage, you know? And, like, Bridget Fonda, you watch her, and it's like, okay, Kira Sedgwick and Campbell Scott are both better actors than Bridget Fonda. Bridget Fonda has that thing. When she's in scenes, you're kind of engaged, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this is a movie where you need sort of charisma. I mean, I do think there's something, too, if you look at this movie and you go, like, okay, scattershot, a lot of characters, different plot lines, trying to capture a city and a time and an age group, and you have one outside character. I could see how in 1984, Cameron Crowe wrote the script as, like, Seattle Fast Times. Like, here's Fast Times with 20-somethings.
Sure.
And then post Say Anything, he was like, oh, I think I found who I am as a director. It's a little more calm.
Yeah, a little more rom-com-y.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
And then, like, filtered it through that. But you could see how Amy Heckerling could have directed the script in, like, 1985, and it was, like, a comedy.
This movie should be a little more bubbly and, like, lively.
Agreed.
And I just wanted Campbell Scott, though. You don't like Campbell Scott?
I like
him. What I like him is that he rejects Hollywood right after this, pretty much. Because he makes Mrs. Parker and the Vicious Circle, which he's really good in.
Yeah.
He makes Big Night
directs
with the Tooch.
It. Yeah.
Directs it with the Tooch.
Writes stars.
Big Tooch.
Love a touch of the Tooch.
Always a touch of the Tooch.
Mwah!
He's
the star,
of the Tooch.
The star of The Spanish Prisoner, which is bonkers.
Yep.
And then he's in, like, doesn't do anything for a while. A bunch of shit I've never heard of. And then he's in Roger Dodger, which is an amazing performance.
Yeah, I need to rewatch that movie.
Great movie.
I didn't like it when I saw it, but I was young.
And then in the same year, maybe the next year,
he's in The Secret Lives of Dentists,
which is a great performance.
I like
very
that
underrated
movie a lot.
Movie.
I think he's excellent in that. I like that movie a lot. You know who else is good in that movie?
Dennis Leary.
Our boy Dennis Leary.
Yeah, I mean, he's really good. And then since then, he's come back, and now he does, like, these sort of small parts in Hollywood movies. Like, he's in Spider-Man. He's in stuff, you know.
The Amazing Spider-Man, too.
And one.
Yeah, and he's been on 55 episodes of Royal Pains, I found out today on his IMDb.
Did not know that.
55 episodes
but, you know,
of Royal Pains.
Look, if you're an actor and you hear the pitch for Royal Pains,
yeah,
you gotta jump at that.
Yeah.
He's a doctor on the beach.
Does he wear shoes? Nope. Does he practice medicine? Yep.
Why is it called Royal Pains? Because rich people are annoying.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm not throwing shade on him being in Royal Pains. He's just got a very interesting career. I think he's a good actor. I don't think he's like a capital M movie star that this movie needs. You need a sack.
Yeah.
And he's so, Campbell Scott.
You need a sack.
Campbell Scott is very thoughtful.
He's a weird little, yeah.
And he's very muted.
He's one of those actors who's good at showing you him thinking.
Yes. And here's another thing with Campbell Scott. Campbell Scott got better when he got older because he always felt like he was 47 years old.
Totally. Oh, I just remembered. I just saw him on Broadway in Noises Off.
Oh, how was he?
Amazing. So funny. Yeah. He was the director, which is a funny, you know. Anyway, it doesn't matter. He was really good.
But you know
really
what I'm
good.
Saying? Like, you watch him in this movie, and he's supposed to be sort of like a young dude. And I watch him the whole time, and I'm like, you seem like you're 47. Like, you're so subdued.
Yeah.
You know?
I kind of felt like that with Keira Sedgwick's
I think
character
both of them,
well.
You know, for a movie that's supposed to be about sort of like a generation on the rise, both of them feel like grown-ups.
There was a part where they're on a park bench, but it's a close shot, and I was like joking out loud. I'm like, are they at a soccer game right now?
Yeah.
Like a kid's soccer game? Yeah. Like, yeah. I felt that way for sure.
They definitely feel too old. I think it's both of their energies are too mature.
Yeah.
And then the Bridget Fonda subplot does feel like, oh, she's like a kid. She's figuring it out, you know? But the two of them, it's like, yeah, why not get married? You're like 47, right? Okay, let's try. I mean, there's no real plot to this movie. Let's talk about the characters, I guess, and their respective plot lines.
Yeah, there's two main plot lines-ish, and then a couple sort of sidelines.
I want to talk about 90s technology.
You want to do Ben's 90s
Ben's
technology
tech corner?
Yeah, we can get to that
What
later.
Do you got?
Well, I mean, do we want to talk about the breast program?
Oh, God.
Okay. So,
all right, so one plot is Bridget Fonda.
Yeah.
Young woman in her 20s. She's got a short haircut.
23.
There you go.
And she says, I want to do something ridiculous before I get too old because I feel like when you're 25, ridiculous becomes embarrassing or something
and
like that.
I'm
she
like
has a
30
line
and
like
I'm watching this and I'm like, God, fuck you. And like Matt Dillon, she's got this on-off thing with Dylan. Matt Dillon's character, he won't commit to her. He's like, I'm still seeing other people.
He's
it's
in a band
cool,
called
right?
Citizen Dick. He thinks he's fucking above it all and she's madly in love with him. Campbell Scott's her like, her next door neighbor,
yeah, their
like
neighbor
best
pals,
friend, and
yeah.
He's like, come on, you don't need to be hung up on a guy like this.
And she decides...
That's a decent Campbell Scott impression,
yeah,
it's right?
pretty good. It's pretty yeah. good.
And listen, she, come on.
Yeah. She decides that a problem with Dylan, you know, with Matt Dillon not liking her, is that she's too flat-chested. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So
that's the ticket.
I mean, she did ask him, and he said...
Sometimes. It's actually one of his best moments in the movie. You watch him try to anticipate how to react to this question when she's like, are my boobs too small for you? And he's like, you know. And
that's the funniest
sometimes.
Answer, too.
Yeah, it's a funny answer.
That scene is they're like in his apartment and she's like shirtless on top of him and she's looking around the walls and every, like,
sure,
he's got collaged
big boobs and the,
all these women on the walls. It's like rock stars.
It's the early 90s, you know?
What can you say?
It was a different time.
Yeah.
So she decides to get a boob job and she.
On a waitress's salary.
Yeah, they never really go into that.
Installments. She'll pay in installments.
Oh,
I just
sure.
felt like there should have been a scene where she calls up her rich mom.
Sure.
And she's like, I need this for student loans.
Sure.
Like, if you gave me one scene like that where it's like, okay, she's
just
conning
give me
money
a
out
one scene like that.
Because I kept on thinking about, especially when they go to the computer and the technology's so state of the art.
Oh, yeah.
This
way
is no back alley boob
edge.
Job.
Right. She goes to see a boob doctor played by
Dr. Bill Pullman.
Dr. Pullman. And he shows her a program that I guess they've full body scanned her boobs. It's like a wireframe like model of her chest. And he's like, how about this? And she's like, boop, 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 like until
dun,
they're
dun,
sort
dun,
of,
dun, dun.
You know, comically
he's
large.
He's like, yeah, I don't know, but let's
like
scale it down a little bit.
Right,
and she's
break.
Like, nope. Brr,
brr, yeah, brr, they just brr, keep brr. On going, dum, 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 bum, 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 like up and down. And he's like, well, on your frame, that might look a little natural. What about this? Boom, 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 boom. And she's like, but I really want to win him over. Bum, 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 bum. And he's like, do you jog? And she's like, a little bit. And he's like, boom, 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 boom. They go back and forth and back and forth. I felt so uncomfortable during this scene. Which I think is actually to this movie's credit. Like, it makes me feel really, really uncomfortable when she's going to do that. Like, I get angry at her in a way I think the movie wants you to, where it's like, come on, dump this guy. Like, don't, you know, change yourself for him. And then that scene where Bill Pullman is not the most elegant scene.
No.
But the scene where Bill Pullman sort of, like, shakes it into her and is like, come on, you don't need to fucking change for some guy who doesn't appreciate you the way you are, you feel like, yeah, thank you.
Those graphics, though, man. You just don't get graphics like that anymore.
No.
Have you tried to get a boob job recently, Ben?
No.
I was just wondering. Like, you know, what I needed was graphics. That's why I didn't do it. You know, it's just the graphics
weren't
there.
What's the program like, though? Yeah.
They brought out a charcoal drawing of what your body would look like with the boobs, and you went, I can't see it.
Yeah, Pullman is such a weird...
career?
Well, yeah, but, like, member of this cast, because he's already been in Spaceballs. Like,
yeah,
he's already around. He was in The Accidental Tourist.
And what about...
two times in a row we've mentioned that movie.
Yeah. While You Were Sleeping? Has he been in that already?
No, that's later. That's 95.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. He's in Newsies. He's in A League of Their Own.
Yeah, he's got a weird career.
He's in Sleepless in Seattle the next year. So, I mean, he plays a dope. And in this, he kind of plays a dope, too, because there's the implication that he's got a bit of a crush on Fonda.
Yeah.
And you think that's where it's going.
Yeah.
But in the end, all he does is, like, sort of tell her, like, look, I don't usually do this, but I don't think you need a boob job and you shouldn't do it. Which is fucking ludicrous.
Yeah.
He's literally the one thing he does is breast augmentation.
Yeah.
He's not going to be like, after all this, be like, look. Everyone else who comes in here, I just, you know, I shove those little, you know, silicone patties in there. But you, yeah. Bridget Fonda, you're a movie star. You
you're
don't need no...
perfect the way you are. Yeah. She kisses him
man.
On the cheek.
It's such horseshit.
She changes
the part.
Let
her get a boob job or not. I don't fucking care.
There is a... What was I going to say about Bill Pullman? I totally blanked on this. Oh, Michael Showalter, that movie The Baxter.
Uh-huh.
He said he, like, based that movie off the Bill Pullman, like, early 90s.
Sure, the Pullman character. Oeuvre.
Right, because he always fulfilled this role of, like, the guy who makes the girl realize who she should actually be with.
Right.
And usually it's, like, he's the guy she's with at the beginning.
Yeah, right. Well, Pullman's role in Sleepless in Seattle, of course.
Right.
It's a classic example, yeah.
But this...
You got your Greg Kinnear in...
Got Mail.
And You Got Mail.
Yeah.
And, a bunch of other fucking movies. Doesn't Greg Kinnear play that role in Someone Like You? I feel like Greg Kinnear's played that role
times. She leaves him for Jackman? Is that what happens in that movie?
I think Kinnear is a more of a villain in Someone Like You. I think he might cheat on her as well, and that's
with Jackman?
Yeah, Kinnear and Jackman get together. It's great.
In this movie, he doesn't even get to be with her. Like, usually he has a relationship, and then he makes her realize who she should be with.
Mm-hmm.
In this, he's just like, look, I'm going to give you some tips for your own date advice. And then you can just leave my office.
Yeah, goodbye. I'll take none of your money.
I regret saying that Matt Dillon was the best performance in the movie, because I did realize what the best performance was.
James LaGrosse?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
He's great.
The number one best performance in this movie is Paul Giamatti.
Oh, he's good.
Oh, Mr. Wrong.
Oh, Mr. Wrong
ben
with Ellen DeGeneres.
He's holding up a phone. He's not saying anything. He's just holding up a phone with the poster for Mr. Wrong on it.
We remember Mr. Wrong. But Mr. Wrong, isn't that sort of like a subtle coming out film for Ellen DeGeneres or whatever? Because, I mean, look at that poster where she's horrified at the idea of getting married to Bill Pullman. And Bill Pullman looks like a serial killer on this poster.
100%.
I can't deny it. But still, I mean, Jesus, he's still he's a nice young man, Bill Pullman.
That movie,
she is screaming aloud.
Yeah, that poster is upsetting. movie is directed by...
the guy who played the Shape in Halloween.
No, but this was the bigger thing I wanted to point out. Director of The Last Starfighter.
Right. That's a great career.
Yeah.
Last Starfighter, Boy Who Could Fly,
Dennis the Menace
with Walter Matthau. Wow, we're off topic.
Yeah, anyway.
No, James LaGrosse is great in this movie.
Giamatti's amazing in this movie.
Giamatti is amazing because it's like... The joke is that they're sitting next to this couple that are making out.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, you know, I get it. I've been in that situation. PDA, you know, it can be annoying. And then they break, and Giamatti is the guy in this making out couple.
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa!
And he's got one word. He's got one word the entire film. He goes, what? What?
Oscar.
Yeah. He's great in it.
I mean, I maybe was not paying attention very closely, but I'd had this moment where I did kind of a double take. And was like, is that Giamatti sucking face?
Giamatti sucking face!
That's the best part
finest film critic.
It's like, because he's introduced making out. Yeah, he is our finest film critic.
Yes.
When he's introduced making out, you're only seeing like slivers of his face. So you're like, maybe? No, that could be. Is the timing work out? And then he looks you straight in the eyes. And he goes, what? James LaGrosse is another interesting example in this film of someone who people thought was going to be a movie star, and it didn't happen.
James LaGrosse, no, but my argument with James LaGrosse, he can't help but play weirdos. He loves it. So good at it.
Can't play normal people.
Hollywood would occasionally, especially on TV, try to squirm him into like a more of a classic, just sort of like a handsome dude role.
He's a handsome dude. Yeah.
He is. I think he's one of my favorite character actors. Whenever he's in a movie, I fucking lose my mind.
Talking about the guy with the African hat?
Yeah, the guy with the ponytail and the glasses. The guy who is the ex of Kira Sedgwick.
No. Okay.
And he's kind of her hippie, you know. Yeah.
No, I'm talking about the friend.
Right, at the coffee shop. He's the other guy who's like talking to Campbell Scott about shit, and he's got the little like skull cap on. He's played by the guy who played Buzz in Hudsucker Proxy.
You mean Jim Trufrost?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. He's Prez on The Wire, but I guess you guys didn't watch The Wire.
He's a
Steppenwolf guy. He's probably from, he's a pal of Johnny Cuse.
From Chicago?
Yeah, from Chicago.
The Pivs?
Pal of the Pivs.
Yeah.
He is, you know, he was in like the original cast of August Osage County. Good actor.
He's a
little, he's fine in this because he's got the look of douchebag yuppie who's got a soul patch and
So the home base of this movie is like the coffee shop where Bridget Fonda and Matt Dillon work. It's one of like Matt Dillon's six jobs.
Yes. He also delivers flowers.
Yeah.
And does some other stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, some other bullshit.
Meh.
Citizen Dick. And then Campbell Scott goes there all the time. Skullcap's the other employee.
Kind of. This is the thing. Yeah. Like, you think, oh, is it going to be them hanging out in the coffee shop? And, like, Cameron Crowe famously said, like, that Friends was a ripoff of Singles. But, like, there's, like, two or three scenes in the coffee shop. Like, it's not enough, you know? Not enough, like, of a culture to this movie.
But then it's also not centered around the apartment buildings,
I mean, you know, they're in them sometimes.
Right.
But then you have the other character who is the woman who's like desperately trying to find a boyfriend, the one with the red hair.
What a great storyline.
Well, that's the thing. It's like she's sort of just like tossed in there. And like you see all these points where the movie could be
Sheila Kelly as Debbie Hunt. Yeah.
Who I like as an actress.
Yeah, she was on L.A. Law. I don't know her very well.
She's a Matchstick Man.
Oh, yeah. So she is.
Yeah,
so
she plays.
Apparently she was in The Guest, which is a great movie.
She's the mom in that.
There you go.
Yeah, she's great in that.
It's weird, her character, but I really liked when she went to get a haircut and she had all of these like previous styles and like all the printouts. Again, guys, printouts, printers, color ink. You know what I'm talking about? 90s technology.
90s technology. Have you ever seen the film Disclosure?
No.
Oh, Ben would love
Disclosure. Would you love this movie? It's a movie that has multiple scenes set in, quote, virtual reality, unquote, and they are not very well done.
Disclosure?
I'm writing it down now.
Imagine a wireframe, like, humanoid model moving like it's, like, sliding towards you, but Demi Moore's face has been, like, put on it, like a pixelated face of Demi Moore.
I'm on board.
Disclosure is a movie from the 90s that had the courage to ask, what if a woman sexually harassed a man.
That is correct.
Now, you're looking at me shocked.
And they were thinking,
jaw agape.
Who should be in this? Maybe like a real subtle comedian who definitely is not not politically correct. A very politically, like Dennis Miller.
Oh,
I just showed him the VR. Have you seen Disclosure?
Yes.
It's a bad movie.
So they used the VR to try to figure out what the sexual harassment was. Because, like you, they couldn't even process the idea of a woman sexually harassing a man. So they go, we're going to use our computers, top-of-the-line computers.
Supercomputer.
To see how it went down. Yeah.
It's not like the NBC TV show Supercomputer.
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry.
But maybe we should do a whole series of, like, 90s tech movies, like The Lawnmower Man.
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
I
all
would love
these movies
that.
With Ben.
Yes.
Yeah. So bad.
The Net.
Oh, The Net.
Hackers.
I just want a movie where at one point a character goes, excuse me, I have to send a fax.
Johnny Mnemonic would be great. I love that movie.
There's this thing in the movie, though, where you could see a movie where it's like the core of this movie is the singles apartment. Here are eight singles who live, and they're all their separate plot lines. Or it could be here are people, they all overlap in the coffee shop.
Or make the chapters work for each character or each story.
Oh, the chapters are totally arbitrary.
It's so stupid.
Every 20 minutes, they just have like a still image of something and a quote that's going to be uttered later in the movie.
I hate that. Yeah. I hate that.
Yeah.
Again, it feels like this movie's reaching for a structure a lot, and they're not quite committing to it.
It's very scattershot. And by the way, I mean, Fast Times doesn't have a structure.
Are people going to be mad at us that we're shitting all over this movie? It's not that
bad. No, it's not
that bad. I didn't dislike watching it. It just didn't leave me with much emotion, whereas Say Anything leaves me with so much. And Jerry Maguire does as well. Like, you know, this movie's just in between those.
But you know what I'm saying? That, like, Fast Times is very scattershot and it doesn't have a plot, but it is much more panoramic.
Mm-hmm.
Its scope is much broader. It encompasses a lot more people. And it takes risks.
It takes storytelling risks. Whereas this is like Bridget Fonda is like, maybe I should get a boob job. And Bill Tolman's like, don't get a boob job. And she's like, all right.
Okay.
And then she's like, I'm over you, Matt Dillon. He's like, I realized I love you.
But the Sheila Kelly thing feels so tacked on when it's like two, like four main characters that are coupled off into two couples.
So it's really just two stories with a little overlap, right?
And then you just have this other person, and it's like either you need
sprinkling it in,
you need like three more people, or you need like two less people.
There's this joke, and like God help us when the fucking Tinder movies start populating the theaters.
Yeah.
Because there's this joke that she tries this like video dating service where she like makes a movie about herself that's sent around to prospective dates.
Directed by?
I don't know.
Tim Burton?
Oh, Tim Burton. Right, right.
Tim Burton plays the guy who directs
the movie.
In the movie,
yes.
In the movie, it's
Tim Burton's
only acting role.
Yep.
And she says that he's the new Martin Scorsese.
Yes. And he convinces her to take her top off.
Yeah.
And then she watches like this dorky montage of guys, which is like kind of funny, but again, super broad.
Her video is maybe my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Her video is pretty good.
Her flying at starts with a psycho homage. Like just the idea that like they're selling like your video is going to cost more, but it's made by a real filmmaker.
Right.
And then it's just this filmmaker showing off his chops in a way that like isn't successful or functional at all as a dating video.
Right.
And then this montage of all the dating videos that are terrible. And then
they're all terrible except for one, the bike guy.
Right.
And they're all like, yeah, the bike guy. Go for the bike.
So she takes a bike to
it's
the bike
thing
guy.
Where it's like suddenly she's friends with Campbell Scott and Bridget Fonda. And it's like, oh, were they friends? Okay. All right.
Because previously she was just kind of in the apartment complex.
And she's annoying.
Yeah.
They're all annoying.
Yeah. Other than Giamatti. Giamatti is really good.
Who?
Giamatti. He's really good. He's my favorite character in the movie.
It's like. And there's, like, these, like, other vague 90s, early 90s shout-outs, like, Kira Sedgwick works for Greenpeace type thing. And Campbell Scott works for the Department of Transportation is trying to, like, get a new train in Seattle.
A super train.
And there's, like,
I do like that.
I think I could do with
tacked on super.
Yeah.
Train 2, hyper train. Or super train 2, super hyper train. Hyper super train. But, like... You know, maybe we could have done a little more with the train. Nah, it's just like, we know he kind of wants a train. And then there's this one scene where Tom Skerritt plays the mayor of Seattle, and he's like, no train for you.
Yeah, the train's brought up very early on when Kira Sedgwick comes back to his apartment. He's got the poster and he explains it to her. And then it's like left on the ground for like 45 minutes, like a shard of a broken plate. And then...
and characters kept stepping on it and it crunches.
Right. And then it, like, and then 50 minutes later, it's like with all this urgency, he's pitching.
I think it's supposed
great music, great coffee.
Yeah,
it's supposed to complete his like downward spiral, right? He like breaks up. He doesn't get his super train.
Did you? Okay, so as
he leaves a message and she doesn't pick it up because her 90s technology.
Yeah, talk about 90s technology.
Her answering machine eats the tape.
That's how it goes sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And also, garage door openers are a big plot point throughout this movie.
Thank you very much. I'm checking off my list.
That's the thing. That's like, I think
the most dramatic check I've ever seen. That was a full arm movement.
So the joke is, because there's that kind of awesome moment at the beginning of the movie.
I love the opening.
It's really great.
That's probably
where
the best part.
Kira falls for this like Spanish guy.
Yeah, Luis.
And Luis, who is played by, let me find the actor's name. He's buried at the bottom there. Camilo Gallardo.
His visa is running up. He's going to have to leave
the
country in 2 days.
He gives her this whole spiel where they kind of have this swoony romance. He's like, I got to go. I'm going back to Spain, but I love you.
They do the sex.
And then she gives him her garage door opener
for some fucked up reason. This is important. He gives her the ring first and is like, you know, I can't stay. If I stay longer, I won't be able to come back for 5 years. I'll come back in 2 months. But until then, here's something to remember me by.
Sure.
Gives her a ring, places it on her finger. Ooh, big gesture. And she's like, here's something for you. My garage door is always open for you. Hands him the garage door opener.
That makes no sense. No. He's going to Spain. You need the garage door opener to what? Open your garage.
Gotta get out. Gotta drive your car.
But Cameron Crowe is like, and this is a mistake we're going to see him make a lot in his later movies.
Yeah.
Where he's like, I've hit on something that's a really great metaphor. It's like the modern wedding ring. It's like the modern pin for your go and study. The garage door opener. Yeah. No.
The pen.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I gave her my heart. She gave me a garage door.
There's that fucking scene where they have sex and we see the garage door open and close. You know, because sex is a rhythmic activity.
Right, right.
It's like punctuated with thrusting, like, yeah. You know, well, usually in a sort of.
That whole sequence is disgusting. Okay?
Because of the fantasy where he imagines Xavier McDaniel telling him not to
you've
come.
You've got close ups of their faces all sweaty and they're just like, right?
No,
and
Ben's
then you
grossed
go.
Out by sex, which is a natural human activity.
And then you go to the basketball thing and I'm like, and I said this out, I'm like, is this a fucking cum joke? And goddamn it, it was a cum
joke. Yeah, well,
joke.
I think actually that joke makes me laugh.
Yeah, I do. I think the joke's well executed, although he does it better in Jerry Maguire.
I mean, so much better.
Yeah.
Because it's so fucking funny in Jerry Maguire.
Yeah.
And we'll get to Jerry
But
Maguire.
I'll say this. So I saw this movie. I was like really into Gen X stuff when I was like 13 or 14 because I hated the time I was living in. So I was like, different time
so
periods.
So you were trying to, sure.
Right? I was like, what are other
sure.
hip periods?
Conjure, right.
Right. So I like watched a bunch of Gen X movies and like listened to a bunch of music, whatever. I spent like 6 months.
Bought a chain wallet.
Yeah, yeah, I actually did. But I maybe even less than 6 months, maybe like a month or two. I was like in a Gen X kind of zone, and I saw this movie.
Started taking swing dancing lessons.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Saw this movie, liked it a lot. Bought it on DVD for
this
like $6.
Movie?
Bought it. Never watched it ever again.
Indeed.
Like, why did I buy this? Because I want to be like, oh, look, I like a movie about 20-something.
I mean, $6. Sex.
Yeah.
Eh, you know.
But I hadn't seen it since then, even
but
though
you
I
owned
had bought it.
It. So did you watch it on DVD?
No, because I think I sold that DVD at
so
some point.
So you watched
I
it on
like,
Amazon X?
I watched it on Amazon X-ray on my new Amazon Fire tablet.
Hey, you fucking shill.
Amazon's a great company. What are you talking about?
Fuck you.
Amazon's a great company. Uh-huh. I like all the stuff they do, especially their pilot.
I watched this on iTunes.
Ugh.
Parody.
Call me up when they do an original series.
They probably will someday.
iTunes
it'll probably be
I've
really expensive.
Actually, all the movies on Amazon Prime.
Yo,
and
yo!
And it's a lovely service.
Thank
and
you.
They, oh, they have a great catalog.
Yeah.
I use it because I have an Apple TV.
Good
so
video player.
Yeah,
that's
really
I
great.
Use it. I
yeah.
use it on my Apple TV. Doesn't have Amazon.
Okay, well, listen.
What are you
going to
do?
My point is, I only, like, going into this, rewatching it as someone who liked it enough the first time I saw it to buy it.
Sure.
At a bargain price, but still I bought it. I was like, I remember like none of this movie. And I was like, the only thing I remember really, remember that the band's called Citizen Dick, right?
Sure.
And I remember one line from this film. And then the one line was not in the movie.
Well, which was?
I had a
it was
very,
you had me at hello? It's actually in Jerry Maguire.
I had a very distinct
memory. Show me the
memory.
Money. That's also Jerry Maguire.
Rosebud. That's Citizen Kane.
Yeah, right.
Not Citizen Dick. No, well, go ahead.
I had a very specific memory of in the scene where they're having sex. I didn't remember the Xavier McDaniel thing.
Sure.
I remembered it going to a close-up of his face, which is in the movie, and then over that close-up there being voiceover of him saying, the most important thing in the world right now is that you don't come.
That's not in the movie.
No, which I stuck in my mind because I was like, that's a gross line. And
yeah,
I kept being like,
fucked up
that's
line.
A gross moment. That's
we
the,
get it.
That's the sentiment of the scene.
Don't
is
come, don't come, don't come.
Xavier McDaniel telling him not to come.
Sure. But he does it at the end of a, like, you know, boilerplate sports
right.
speech where he's like, hey, you know.
Anything else? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, we gave 100%, blah, 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 blah. And anything else? Oh, yeah, make sure. What is it? What's his name?
Daniel? David?
Steve.
Campbell? I just love that I imagined a terrible line from this movie and held it against the movie. I was like, yeah, but you know that fucking scene in Singles where the voiceover, he goes, the most important thing in the world right now is that you don't come?
It sounds like a bad Cameron Crowe line, but,
yeah.
You know, Cameron Crowe is better than that.
Yeah, agreed.
Especially now. You're actually wrong about Giamatti. I just remembered. You're wrong. Dead wrong.
About him being the best performance?
Yeah.
Who's the best performance?
Victor Garber. With the mustache. You know how some people say, like, you know, LeBron James for the win? Victor Garber with the mustache in the billiard room.
Yeah.
With the best performance.
The rose petals. Yeah, he plays, what's her name? A redheaded friend who goes
Sheila
on the...
Sheila Kelly's character of... we already forgot her name. Jesus, Debbie.
Debbie. Right, okay. Yeah, so
Debbie's
she
trying to meet a guy.
Picks the bike guy. She bikes
picks
to a place.
Picks the bike guy. There's a whole sequence where she bikes to the wrong restaurant.
Yeah.
Bikes to the other restaurant. She missed it. Her flat tire. Bikes home. Uh-oh, the guy ran in with a roommate.
They're
played by Allie Walker.
Yeah, and
decent
they...
Decent actress.
Yeah, and they were in college together?
Yeah, they're like old college buds, and they're obviously flirting, and they have like a conversation outside where she's like, I saw him first, like, I have dibs on this guy.
And then Sheila
really,
Kelly makes Allie
it's
Walker.
It's a real great contribution to society and feminism.
Hold on, I wrote it down. They agree upon $80.
Yes.
for his dong.
She wants $200 reimbursement for the dating tape, and instead it's $80 for the dong.
And dishes for the month.
Dishes for the month.
Mm-hmm.
Dishes and dong for $80. You think that's the end of that plot line that they've only spent 5 minutes on.
Sure.
But then she goes to an airport and she's like, hey, can you seat me next to
a single?
And the woman's like, I think I have just the person. And she's on a plane with like a 13-year-old.
Mm-hmm. He is single.
Joke. And then
he makes a joke. He's like, can I go out with you? Like, he's like, I got that whole joke. You know, it's funny when your little boys are like Casanovas.
Jokey voice. And then he lands at the airport, and his dad, his divorced dad, who he was there to see, is Victor Garber.
VG!
With a mustache.
With the mustache!
And he's got one shot in the film.
No, he's got a couple.
Really?
Yeah,
because
it cuts, you know.
Oh, them together? Yeah.
To him. And he says the most perfect thing in the world, which is, those are great earrings. I can't even remember what his line is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that actually that guy was the one of the creepy guys from the dating video. Like one who's really close to just like, I'm so alone. I thought it was like a callback to him.
That moment's funny too when the guy goes, I'm just so lonely.
Apart from the 1973 film Godspell, this is basically his first performance.
Really?
In a film. Obviously, he was a major theater actor.
Right, yeah.
And then after this, you know, he is fantastic in Sleepless in Seattle, which is the next year. He's one of Tom Hanks's, like, sort of guy buddies. They have the scene where they talk about where they cry every time they watch The Dirty Dozen.
Yeah.
I've seen Sleepless in Seattle several times.
I was going to say, some interesting overlap.
He's in Mixed Nuts.
Oh, Mixed Nuts.
He's
got to mix them nuts.
First Wives Club. And then he's in a little movie called Titanic.
Yeah, and he's in a little movie called Legally Blonde.
He's in a little movie called Milk.
He's on a little TV show called Elias.
We could keep going.
Yeah, and
he
no
played
one
half
like
of Firestorm in The Flash.
Oh, right, that half, the top.
That was weird.
Yeah. What to say about this movie? I mean, the main plot line we haven't even talked about because it's just so like boilerplate.
Is we were talking about the garage opener.
Right,
that story
right.
Wow, that was a while ago.
Yeah, she goes to the club. She sees Luis the day after, she told her friend that
beginning.
She thinks they're going
to
get married.
Right, no, I just like that because she just, she thinks he's gone. She goes to a bar, sees him at the bar, and he just kind of goes like, eh.
And you think, okay, maybe this movie's going to be about the perils of dating, like different people, it's different relationships.
It's trying to be a
but
little
then
bit.
It's mostly two characters in two different relationships, like, that stay throughout the film. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do.
You could see it being all these different combinations of people having all these little flings.
Well,
and it's like...
Right, because do you want to talk about the pregnancy subplot? Is that the fucking worst? That is the worst kind of Hollywood plotting, where it's like, she gets pregnant. Why? To spur a conversation. They can't have the conversation!
Yeah.
And like, so she gets pregnant, and he's like, oh God, what are we going to do? And he like proposes. And she says, don't make this a memorable chili dog. Don't make me remember this chili dog.
Because it's a memorable chili dog.
And then they get
don't even have to say
so they're
going to
get married. Then
she has to take a bite.
They get in a fucking car accident and she loses the baby like that. There's no trauma. There's nothing earned.
No.
Like, she just sort of wakes up and she's like, I lost the baby, didn't I? No one actually even says yes. You're just like, yep.
And then she wants to take some time alone, so she goes on a boat. And when she comes back, she's like, I think we should just be friends. Or he says it first. He's like, you know, there's no reason we have to go back to the way.
But he's on the defensive because he knows she's feeling it. Like she's into her work again. And then, like, he leaves her a message and the tape beats it. But then they get back together. And the whole thing fucking is so, like, predictable, but not in a fun way. You're just like, yeah.
Well, he calls her from a Soundgarden concert.
Yeah, well, you know, we've all done that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We've all gone to a Soundgarden concert, then gone to the phone booth,
the payphone
at the concert hall.
Excuse me, I just have
hall.
To make a check.
Hey,
here.
Check.
I do like that scene where he's in the payphone, and everyone's knocking on the door because they think it's the bathroom, and he's trying to leave this.
No,
voicemail.
And then, right, that's always going to be the end of my joke. We've all gone to the payphone, and people have tried to pee in it. Yeah.
It is weird though that like the Citizen Dick doesn't like play in this movie.
No, I think we hear something because we have a song that's called like Touch My Dick.
Yeah.
It's not actually called Touch
it's
My
called
Dick,
Touch
but it's
Me
close
Dick.
Enough. Yeah.
Touch Me, comma Dick. And Pearl Jam plays the other members.
Yeah. And Eddie Vedder's on screen and they even mention him in like a review, a negative review.
Yeah.
I like that scene with the negative review.
Yeah, he goes, don't read anything negative, and they have so to skip like, over the paragraphs that are about how...
And then they're like, and the competent drum work of Eddie Vedder is like the first thing.
But the band definitely, like, for a guy who's so interested in music, the band feels like kind of an afterthought here.
Yeah, I think he does a better job with Almost Famous having a fictional band.
But I did hear he wrote, like, a full track list of what their songs would be.
Uh-huh.
You don't hear them perform. And Soundgarden, who were in this movie, were like, oh, those are good fake song names. And apparently Soundgarden, like, wrote a bunch of, like, Chris Cornell wrote a bunch of songs off of that.
You Know My Name! Did he write You Know My Name?
Yes, that was based off of singles.
No, actually, I did hear this Spoon Man was
Spoon
one
Man
of the
is based off of, like, the Soundgarden Spoon Man song.
Spoon Man.
Spoon Man!
Fucking 90s, man.
Is based off of, that was a fake song title from singles, but he, like...
Camera Crow's like, like, looking around, he's eating cereal, Spoon Man, great!
Spoon Man!
The music in this movie, apart from, you know, they pepper in a lot of the grungy, you know, tracks, but they also the music by Paul Westerberg of The Replacements. That's like the score, quote unquote, the little jangly little guitar music. And this movie was shot by Tak Fujimoto.
Yeah, it looks good.
It does, actually. It looks pretty good.
We said, like, you know, he's good at, he hires good cinematographers.
He's
he
zooming.
Hires good DPs.
This is some zooms.
Yeah, and I do like the classic Tak Fujimoto, like, direct address to the camera. The scenes where they're literally monologuing to the camera, but when he places the camera so that the lens is the character's eye line and you're like placed in the conversation.
Yeah.
Same thing he did to very different effect in Silence of the Lambs.
In Silence, and he does it in The Sixth Sense.
Yes.
And
I like that.
Me too. Another tidbit, Katie Rich, former guest of this podcast.
Past and future guest.
Past and future
of the
guest.
Show.
Her husband's sister, he was telling me this yesterday, it was at her birthday party yesterday, lived in the singles apartments.
Oh, wow.
And apparently they had a lot of leaks. A little bit of info for you.
Like leaking like of plot details from the movie Singles?
Correct. Okay. Yes. No. Yeah. Leaking like CIA secrets.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Leaking like a stolen sex cam video. Yeah. No. Leaks like water.
Ben looks like he has a point that he's eager to make.
Well, while we were on the subject of music,
some
montages that were kind of problematic for me.
It's Touch Me, I'm Dick.
Okay.
What are some bad montages?
Well, there is the scene, and it's like kind of a recurring thing of the magazine stand.
Yes.
Which I'm into. I love magazines.
Right. He
great
he 90s does that
technology.
A lot.
Yeah. You don't get
it's
to
a little
touch,
older than 90s, but it was still in the 90s.
Your media anymore, you know?
Like the tactile
really
media.
It.
Yeah.
Touchy media.
Yeah.
But, there's the scene where after he blows it at the club, they run into, what's her name?
Kira Sedgwick again.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they play a little classic blues romance riff. It's like, what?
Can you give us that romance riff?
Well, it's like bad blues, like music.
God,
Ben
can't.
Really got heated up about this movie.
Yeah. Can you try to approximate the riff right now?
Yeah, it's like, fine. It's like, she likes the bed of homes.
Oh my god.
She likes the Maxim magazine. You get it.
Yeah, I get it, yeah.
And then there was a jazz part too, where I was just like, if this is about grunge music, the fuck are you putting in this stupid shit?
It's a weird movie.
It's a funny little movie.
So it's 92, and then Jerry Maguire's 95 or 96?
96.
Yes,
and remember,
weird.
This movie was made in, like, shot in, like, 1990.
91.
And,
90,
like, yeah,
91.
It was, like, done by 91.
Yeah.
It was on the shelf for a year.
Yeah.
It comes out September 92.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, he takes a break, writes a movie about a sports agent who has an epiphany about his business, but then opens an independent sports agency with one client and also gets in a romance with a secretary from the sports agency. And Tom Cruise decides to be in it.
The biggest movie star
in 1996.
In the world.
I mean, you know, because it's a good script, but still, that's something.
You couldn't write this shit, you know? I mean, it's crazy that Tom Cruise did the film.
It is. And we'll talk about that next week. I mean, that was when Cruise, I feel like, was like, I want to work with really interesting creative, you know, he picks De Palma to make Mission Impossible.
Right.
Like, you know, he's like, he's trying to make interesting movies. He's going to make, you know,
well, he
work
only
with
works
Paul
with
Thomas
auteurs.
Anderson. Yeah.
That was like Cruise's thing was like, if you look at his movies for a while, it's like, I'll do Pollock. I'll do Scorsese. I'll work with De Palma.
Right.
I'll work with, like,
right.
he only.
And Kubrick.
Yeah. He only would make movies with auteurs for a very long while there. I mean, you know, I guess in his mind, going for Jerry Maguire was like a Paul Thomas Anderson thing of like, okay, this is a guy who hasn't totally, like, done the thing yet, but, like...
Sure, but I think he can pull this off. Like, I think this, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
But, like...
With me on board, he can land the plane.
Right, but with Magnolia, you're coming straight off of Boogie Nights, and with this, you're coming straight off of Singles
it's,
with Jerry
it's
Maguire.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
I mean,
I don't know, man.
He took a risk. It paid off.
He did?
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that next week.
Yeah, I don't know what more I can say about this movie.
Well,
I got some things. I
oh
got plenty
God.
Of things.
Ben, Jesus, what else?
We got roses in the pregnancy aisle.
All right, Ben's just ripping on random shit in the movie.
That was fucking weird, man. Who does that? That's terrible.
Anything else?
Yeah, of course. okay, dating services. Oh, when you meet Matt Dillon's character, he's silk screening shirts.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
So Citizen Dick shirts. It's true.
Cool.
'Cause he's an artist.
90s technology. Check. Boy, oh boy.
Ben is genuinely checking here.
He is. He's checking off.
He's adding check marks with
pad.
A lot of flourish.
Here's what Matt Cook of The Stranger, which is Seattle's Alt Weekly, said at the time. He's relying on the general hipness of our little burg and the star power of a few local musicians to make a bundle of dough, and he hasn't bothered to back them up with anything worth remembering. Yeah. They were mad about it. Anyway, Crow says that Friends, you know, is developed in the next year and obviously hits our screens in 94.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it is kind of this sitcomified. It's the same idea of like the whole concept is just being single in your late 20s and you're a Generation Xer.
Yeah.
You know, and like you have a bunch of jobs, you know?
It's definitely a movie about people having jobs. Yeah.
All right. More stuff. okay. When Fonda breaks up with her mans.
Uh-huh.
I like that she buys a ton of magazines and then carries them up onto the roof with a landline. Like a fucking boss. So she can take calls and she can just read magazines all day and night.
Wait, David, do you hear that?
What? No, I have one more thing to say before it happens.
Wait,
I hear something off in the distance.
All right, what is
it? Wait. What is going on? Hold on, let's get closer.
It's time for the Burger Report.
Okay.
We're not done with Singles, but I think we got a sneak attack of Burger Report.
Well, have you got a Burger Report?
No, is it pitching a bed?
Wait, what? okay.
I don't have anything. I don't think I've even had a burger.
I had a burger. I haven't seen anything.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Jim Carrey.
Oh.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
He
is this crazy Carrey, like Emma Stone loving Jim Carrey, Mr. Popper's Penguins Carrey.
Was he popping them penguins?
I think this was around the penguin popping time. It was a penguin popping period, you could say.
Uh huh.
And he was, it was weird. He like really did not want to be treated VIP.
Uh-huh.
He was like, seat me downstairs. Right. Mm-hmm. And he was honestly such a nice guy. I didn't take his order, but I delivered his burger.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Okay.
And, I just remember him being with,
Jenny McCarthy?
No, he wasn't. It was post that, for sure. He was with a rando.
Rando? A non-famo?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then I think he asked for some ketchup.
There you have it, folks. I have one thing to say. This is a tidbit.
I like that it starts from far away. You keep doing that.
I'm gonna keep that going on. Okay, one more tidbit. Sorry, I just wanted a little burger. A
couple of tidbits.
I was feeling hungry. I want a
Derek,
little burger.
Derek on July 5th, 2015, Derek Erdman, who is some fucking rapper or something,
okay,
some white rapper, held a public screening of this movie at the courtyard of the Capitol Hill Apartments. Capitol Hill's Coryell Court Apartments. These Singles apartments.
Uh huh.
The event was attended by 1,000 people. Despite initial concerns by the landlord, the event went off smoothly. The crowd was respectful and cleaned up after themselves. Reports of Bridget Fonda being in attendance were false, burying the lead. It was actually her aunt Jane Fonda.
Oh.
What?
Two-time Academy Award winner Jane Fonda?
Great actress Jane Fonda was
legendary,
like,
movie star and rebel rouser Jane Fonda.
Screening my niece's movie down over in Seattle. Oh, yeah, I'll pop over. Check it out.
Also, who has ever visually mistaken Jane Fonda for Bridget
She's
Fonda?
Several years older.
And they don't look that similar.
Jesus.
Well, that's a very bizarre tidbit.
Yeah, you guys are kind of wigging out, too, by the way.
As dudes? What do you mean?
Oh, that's just a reference to the,
to the movie.
Yeah, they use like really old 90s like terminology that I just loved.
Can I throw something out there that I that hit me while watching this movie?
Sure.
I feel like watching this in particular, like Cameron Crowe is maybe responsible for a lot of what went wrong in American independent cinema. And I know he's not an independent filmmaker.
Yeah, I mean, it's a studio movie, yeah.
I mean, but that's what I think is interesting is you watch this and you watch Say Anything and you're like, these would never be studio movies today, right?
Yes.
And that changes the tenor of everything because there's like a big difference if like you're a little studio movie
mm-hmm.
and they're like, okay, we'll give you $9 million. You're off right. the radar. We're not paying that much attention to you. Right. You have studio funding, but you know the movie's not falling apart at the seams.
Right.
And when you're an independent movie, when like the financing could fall out at any moment, everything's kind of being
everything's
held together.
Everything's
got to
matter. Everything's got to be ready.
Right.
When you get all the money together, you got to have a polished script, you
right.
know.
That's the thing. Like, even if you're a big budget independent film, it's still, it's like danger zone all the time, right?
Danger zone!
Danger zone! And I look at this and Say Anything, and Jerry Maguire to a lesser degree, you know, both in the ways that they're successful and unsuccessful, respectively, as films. They were sort of this pushing this. Okay, so you go in like the 70s. Everything used to be high concept, right?
Okay, okay.
And then in the 70s, there's this shift to, like, high concept premises, but done in sort of this workaday blue-collar way.
Okay, fine. There's also the death of the studio system and all that. But
I'm
you
saying
know,
I think...
Rise of, you know, great directors.
I think that is what comes out of the 70s, new Hollywood, studio-driven, director-driven studio days. The sort of, like, okay, French Connection is a cop movie, but it's a cop movie that doesn't function like a thriller.
Yeah.
Right? You can make it more sort of everyday. You can make it about
incident
and about, you know,
I get you.
Character
yeah,
behavior.
It's not about he has to get addicted to heroin and then kick it, which is what The French Connection 2 is about. Very
right.
high concept, very silly.
Right.
Oh, hey, speaking of heroin dealers, the guy from Pulp Fiction, he was the clown.
Oh, Eric Stoltz is the mime in this film.
Yeah.
And was also the party guy.
I told him that he was in Say Anything, and Ben was like, oh.
He was the party guy who makes Cusack the keymaster. He gives Cusack the sack.
Oh,
he's also
I
in Jerry Maguire.
Him.
He's also in Jerry Maguire. Anyway, finish your thought because I want to do the box office game.
Yeah,
because
I do think that like Cameron Crowe spoke to a certain generation of burgeoning filmmakers who were like, oh, I can make a movie that's just about like people talking. You know, his movies were so low concept.
Sure.
And they were just sort of character based and dialogue based that people were like, oh, it's just interesting characters and they're overlapping and they're just going through like daily life.
Mm-hmm.
And even a movie like this that isn't that great, you can tell it's written by a good writer. Like, it feels like a bad screenplay by a good writer.
Okay.
Who is sort of perceptive and detail-driven.
Okay.
And then I think all these independent filmmakers, like, people in film school around the time that these movies are coming out were like, oh, this is what I want to do. And you get a bunch of shitty, like, films, and now the films, like, so many Sundance movies today are the films inspired by the films inspired by the films inspired by.
I don't think you can take it all the way to the present day, because I think this died. I think this died.
A little bit.
No,
but
I think it died.
I feel like it's just like a little bit quirky.
No, you're thinking of Ed Burns movies. You're thinking of
Ed Burns movies.
You're thinking
movies.
Of the nightmare of the mid to late 90s and when Sundance is just all that.
Yes.
You know, all
that's
white
the
guy
main
movies
thing
whining about jerking off and like, you know, falling in love with fucking, you know, TV girl stars like Jennifer Aniston. Like.
Yeah, fuck that stuff.
No, that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I do think, yeah, maybe Cameron Crowe definitely has some DNA strands, you know, in that sort of stuff.
People took the wrong
but
lessons
I think,
from him. Yeah.
I think that has kind of petered out a little bit. I mean, not that these movies aren't getting made still, but there's also other movies. And like you go to a Sundance now, you know, there's a little more of a wider variety of genres available of voices making indie movies.
Sure.
And of course there's more platforms, so it's easier to I mean there's still mean I'm not gonna diss upcoming movies. But okay. Oh you know
box office game.
No, it's the craziest thing in the world. You'll never guess any of the top five. Never.
Okay, the year
Singles opens at number 3, $4 million. It clears 18 total.
The year is 1992.
Yeah, September 92. I'll tell you that deeper in the box office are movies like Sister Act, which has cleared up 132.
Whoop.
You got Batman Returns all the way down there. It's got 160 million, but it's basically done with its run.
My favorite of the Batman films.
You've got Unforgiven, which has made $70 million over the last couple months.
And it
and
will
is
win
going
best
to go
picture
on to win
year.
Best Picture, okay. Yes. But number one, well, it's a Phil Alden Robinson joint.
Field of Dreams?
Nope.
Sneakers?
Yeah, sneakers. Who doesn't love sneakers?
Sneakers.
Is that the noise they make?
Sneakers.
Have you seen Sneakers?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I believe you.
I like Sneakers, yeah. Good cast. It's fucking Redford, Poitier, Aykroyd,
mm-hmm.
Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
Strathern.
And that's yeah, River Phoenix. That's when he's at his most, like, cutie.
Oh, he's so cute.
Oh, this isn't, I thought it was Leaf.
No.
No, not Leaf. No, and river. Not Leaf slash Joaquin.
No, this
it's
is,
river.
Before you turn over a new leaf, you had to go down the river.
Leaf's still pretty young at this point. Leaf's yeah. still kind of late teens.
Okay.
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 Number two at the box office.
Number two at the box office is a movie starring Kurt Russell and Martin Short.
Captain Ron?
What the fuck is that movie? I've never heard of it.
You never heard of Captain Ron?
No.
Martin Short's on a boat. Captain Ron's a captain.
Look, I mean, this all sounds great. This all sounds great.
They used to play on the Disney Channel a lot. Kurt Russell's like a boat captain with an eye patch.
So is it like a kid's movie?
It's like a Touchstone kind of comedy.
Is it like a Gone Fishing?
Yeah, it's like a Gone Fishing. Yes, exactly. I'd say it's analogous to Gone Fishing. Martin Short and his wife, are on a boat, and they got a captain on the
and
boat.
Kurt Russell's sort of
a pirate-y.
Big funny captain guy?
Yeah, and they're mild-mannered, and he's wacky.
Number four at the box office is an allegorical film by a major auteur who is going through a little bit of a tough time in the press.
Because
he did a real
wives?
Fucked up thing. Yep.
The film is Husbands and
Hubbies
Wives.
And Wivies yeah. with Sidney Pollack and Judy Davis and Mia Farrow. Yeah, that's a weird movie.
Who is the director?
Woody Allen.
Yeah.
Who had recently dumped Mia Farrow for their adopted daughter,
yep.
Soon Yi.
Oh, she was like 13, right?
Gonna see Cafe Society tomorrow. Woody Allen still makes films.
Makes them
once a year.
Every year.
That happened in 1992. It's 2016.
You also could watch him play jazz music at the...
What
is it?
Village East or something.
No, Cartwright?
The Carlisle.
Carlisle?
Yeah. That's our plug for the day is go see Woody Allen play clarinet at the Carlisle.
It's only $80.
Number five is a great work of Jewish cinema starring Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, among other people.
School Ties?
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Okay, I want to go
the
through
early
the
early 90s, baby.
Rest of the 10. What's six?
Honeymoon in Vegas.
Oh, so Cage is, he's rattling around there.
Yeah, he's rattling around.
Yeah.
You know, you got young SJP.
What number, what week is
that's
that?
That's number six, and it's fourth week. It's made $28 million.
Okay. Yeah.
You got Single White Female, which was a decent hit.
So Fonda's all over the 10.
She is, big Fonda.
Yeah.
You got Unforgiven. Number nine, Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth.
I was going to try to guess this.
Okay. Not a Hellraiser I've seen.
No. A lesser Hellraiser entry.
Number 10 is a film called Wind.
Never heard of it.
Matthew Modine, Jennifer Grey.
Oh, it's a Modine Grey. Okay.
I've literally never heard of that
Yeah, me
movie.
Neither.
You got Death Becomes Her. You got Pet Sematary 2. Bob Roberts. Yeah, that's about it. 92. Unforgiven's a great movie, but not a sterling year for cinema.
No, definitely not. Merchandise Spotlight.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, no, there was no merchandise produced in this movie. I was kidding you.
Is there any Jerry Maguire merchandise? I feel like there isn't, but there should be.
There should be.
Like, maybe there's a Rod Tidwell, rookie card or something.
I feel like if that movie had been made, like, 4 years later, there would be a Rod Tidwell doll. They would have made some, like, fucking talking keychain. They would have made something that said, show me the money.
There has to be a show me the money thing. Maybe not. Maybe Cameron Crowe is above that.
Like a Big Mouth Billy Bass.
Because they never even released, they never even released, like, a Stillwater record.
It came as a bonus disc on the
Untitled. Are we going to watch the Untitled cut?
I think, let's announce that. I think we're going to watch the Untitled cut of Almost Famous, the bootleg cut. Mm. I think that's what we're going to watch.
By the way.
It's Crow's preferred version.
The next weeks, or 2 weeks from now, The Mighty Ducks comes out. So
the first one?
Yeah, in 92.
Oh, so American cinema is about to change. I mean, the whole landscape's about to be.
And The Last of the Mohicans, which is a really good movie.
Right, so that undoes some of what Mighty Ducks does. One step forward, two steps
So, yeah,
back.
You know, I mean, singles.
Yeah, what
it's
you,
out there.
What can you say? It exists. It definitely exists.
It has its fans.
We watched it.
We were pretty dismissive. And I do feel like some people might be mad about that.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. I actually don't know. I've never met anyone who's really passionate about this movie, but I know they exist.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say maybe rewatch it,
see if it still holds up.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's not up. Bad, but it just. It feels,
garage door?
It feels pretty inconsequential. Oh, David just handed me his garage door.
Opener. No, yeah. The whole door.
No, he handed me the whole door, and he handed Ben the opener. And now Ben's hitting it, and I'm getting hit in the back with the garage door because I put it behind me.
Oh, boy. Who's your favorite?
Who's my favorite what?
Of the four. Like, not in the movie, just in general. Kira, Campbell, Matt, and
Bridget Fonda.
Bridget.
I like Bridget Fonda.
Yeah.
And I also, I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonda. The fact that she's been gone for so long makes me appreciate her more.
What if Fonda came back?
I would love that.
It's funny because, you know, Quentin Tarantino obviously took it upon himself to get Jennifer Jason Leigh an Oscar nomination last year. And, you know, what if her single white female counterpart, what if he brings her back?
It'd be great. I would love to see her do anything, but, you know, by all accounts.
Or say anything?
I'd love to see her say anything. Mm-hmm.
You like that, Ben?
Maybe she's just too busy playing chimes on Danny Elfman scores. I don't know what she's doing.
Does she do the chimes? Is she the chime
I don't know. She's
artist?
Married to him. I mean, I want to believe they have a...
Plays his chimes.
Well, David, come on.
Well, Oingo Boingo, isn't that?
Yeah,
Oingo,
she does
Boingo,
Oingo his Boingo, yeah, but the chimes joke was out of line.
What if it turns out Bridget Fonda's been listening every week?
I hope so. Bridget, I mean, please come on the show if you're a blankie. You can be a guest.
We'd love to talk to you.
Yeah, if you want to talk about.
Single white female?
Yeah, we are.
Only. Single white female.
Only, yeah. I feel like we're running on fumes now, right?
We're done.
This is a soft ending, you know? I feel like.
Oh, some breaking news.
Oh?
No, I don't think I can reveal this, actually. But I'll tell you off mic.
Okay.
It's not interesting. It's a little tidbit from Katie Rich. Hmm?
Wait a second. Do I hear something off in the distance?
I don't know. What?
Is this the orange twist file?
The orange twist file.
Oh, God.
It's the orange twist file.
Ben, you can just say I don't have anything this week.
No, but you know he's got something. We got to end strong.
Yeah.
Hold on 1 second. Let me open up the filing cabinet.
Because it's the orange twist file?
Yeah, it's a file. Let me open
that
the
sounds
file.
Like a 90s video game where you, like, you know, open a cabinet and make, like, a really... Yeah.
And then we flip through the files.
I don't think Ben has anything.
Well, I'm not allowed to say this, I think.
Okay, what if you tell the story and you bleep the name out? So we know and the audience at home
They'll
is to
hate
guess.
That.
I guess that's okay.
I like it.
All right. So,
Oh, my God.
Has been known to have a bit of a drinking problem.
Yeah, I've heard that.
He was sort of a regular.
Okay. All right.
And would come in on occasion. To have a nightcap.
Sure, yeah. How many nightcaps?
Well, I think he had a bunch when he got there.
Yeah.
And so, but he was a cool dude and, like, would chat with you and stuff, you know? It was, like, there often enough.
Mm-hmm.
And one night we closed, but he stayed and hung out with the employees.
Sure.
And we were all getting pretty drunk, maybe even smoked a little weed.
What?
Yeah.
Token the reefer?
Yeah, and then we were all putting songs on the iPod, right?
Okay.
And he started picking songs, and we all started dancing. And then that dude was naked.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like, how quickly?
I mean, I was drinking, too, but, you know.
Were you naked?
It was, no. It was definitely weird. It was definitely like,
he was
all
like
of a
the
sudden,
only
he was like,
guy.
Woo, we're doing this, guys. Yeah, here's my dick. You know?
How was that dick?
It was pretty good.
Decent wing?
Yeah, it's a good dick.
I'm not surprised.
Mm-hmm.
But our bouncer had to put his clothes back on for him.
Oh, boy.
So, sort of drunk.
Well, if you have any guesses as to who Ben is talking about, please tweet at them at us, blankcheckpod, or email blankcheckpodcast@gmail.com. We will not respond.
No, you're never going to find out.
No, but, you know, just have fun guessing.
Yeah, I think it's fun.
Yeah, and, you know, share any other thoughts you may have with us. I have a feeling this is going to be our least listened to episode. I don't mean that because of quality. I just think people don't want to hear anyone talk about singles. But
yeah, it'll be a little blip.
Look, next week,
Jerry Maguire's great.
Yeah, we're going to fucking show you the podcast.
Yep.
Are you ready?
Yep.
For Jerry Maguire.
Show me the podcast.
You had me at Hello Fennel.
Ah!
That came from one of our listeners. I forget who, but someone tweeted that at us and it was really good.
You complete my podcast.
You Okay. Thank you all for listening.
Yeah.
Please rate, review,
I'm gonna sneeze.
Subscribe, sneeze off mic, and...
You know, whenever you do NPR, sorry, Ben. That was... Ben looks disgusted right now. Yeah, sorry. That's okay. It's just allergies. When you do NPR, they have a sneeze button.
Yeah.
No, I've not here.
Yeah.
Not
and here. As always...
And as always...
David,
mm-hmm.
because I love you,
oh.
I'm going to be the one who says, bless you. Thank you.
Forgot about that.
He's untight.
Hate that. All he has to do is say, bless you.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.